Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 93 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John. And in this episode, it's all about product activation. And did you know that 60% of users who sign up for SaaS products only log in once? That's crazy. But that speaks to how vital user onboarding experience is. That's why I decided to hang out with SaaS onboarding expert Aaron Krall, and he gives out his advice on how you can build a better experience for your new users. In episode 93, you learn first how to increase your trial to paid conversion by 30% and higher with Aaron's onboarding email formula. Second, how you can identify the roadblocks that are stopping you from accelerating your growth. And third, how you can re-engage users who went through your free trial but never upgraded to your paid product. Before we jump in, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Superside. Built for marketing, creative, product design, and strategy teams, Superside makes it easy to bring your ideas to life. With a dedicated team assigned to all subscription customers, Superside delivers game-changing design at lightning-fast speeds with no pricing surprises. Create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com. You can also find the link in the description of this episode. Enough about me, let's jump in into my chat with Aaron. Hey everybody, I'm excited to chat with Aaron. He is a SaaS onboarding specialist, and I'm just excited to talk to him. I've heard some of his talks other places and podcasts other places. How's it going, Aaron? How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Where are you calling from? Where are you based out of?
Salt Lake City, Utah.
Can't be that far from Toronto, Canada, but it kind of is.
Are you in Toronto? Is that where you're
yes,
at?
Yes, I am.
Oh, nice. Okay. I love Canada. A lot of really good friends in Canada. Beautiful place.
Yeah. Have you been to Toronto by any chance?
I've been to Vancouver. And that's it.
Vancouver for the CTA conference by any chance, or just travel?
No, this was many years ago for a choir concert in high school. Went to Vancouver, and then I went to another place, really, really beautiful place in Canada. I can't remember. It was in BC. I can't remember where it was. If I remember it, I'll tell you, but it was really, really beautiful.
Well, that's awesome. I've been to Vancouver. It's very, very nice there. Well, I'm excited to talk to you about what you're working on, but before we do, can you share a little bit of a story of how you became this SaaS onboarding specialist?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So a few years ago, I had just sold a business of mine doing marketing. And I was doing mostly video marketing, actually, as a producer for videos. And I really wasn't feeling fulfilled. And I know this now, but I didn't know this at the time. What I really wanted was to find a problem that I enjoyed solving for an audience that I enjoyed solving it for. And in the businesses I've had previously, I always solved problems that I was good at for people that I didn't really care about, or I tried solving problems for people that I really liked that I didn't really know how to solve. And so so I stopped, I took a break, and then I just started this group called SaaS Growth Hacks on Facebook. And I thought SaaS would be a good, I know there's nothing sexy about this at all, but I just thought SaaS would be a good market for me to like learn about. Because I've always been into technology and, you know, I'm pretty savvy when it comes to that. And I have a lot of marketing background. And so I just kind of started this group, had a lot of conversations, hundreds and hundreds of conversations with SaaS companies. And just over time, I just started applying stuff that I learned that I knew from my marketing background into a SaaS kind of world. And from there, yeah, that's pretty much it. I just started learning more about it. I spend most of my time learning and practicing and coming up with strategies that have worked in other marketing capacities, like direct sales and, you know, direct mail and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and applying it to SaaS, and then figuring out how to get it to work for SaaS. And then once I get it to work, I turn a framework and then put it into my that I use that for my accelerator group. So that's kind of how I got started.
An interesting story. I'm going to definitely talk about how you can leverage video then for onboarding in a bit. But first of all, when we talk about onboarding, do you find that a lot of like tech executives in SaaS companies or just founders or marketers in general, they kind of overlook onboarding?
Here's what I've learned is that under a certain, it really depends on the SaaS that you have. If you have an enterprise level SaaS, there's no way that you're going to be able to onboard customers self-serve without a salesperson. So most of those companies don't really focus a lot on any kind of like onboarding process because there's a sales rep. I come across a lot of companies in tons of different like areas. One area is companies that have an AE who sell the product, who are responsible for customer success, who just kind of plop the customer into the software and just kind of hope they figure it out. And the AE is there as kind of a reactionary kind of thing. So they react to if the client says, I can't figure out how to do this. The AE says, oh, well, we can do that. It increases churn when you don't have like a good onboarding process. And it also decreases customer happiness and increases the AE's work. So on that side, I see a lot of people ignoring onboarding just because they replace it with an AE. On the other hand, we have like the totally other hand, which is like totally self-serve, no one-on-one sales team. Onboarding is like the thing that they know they need to have. And it's not overlooked necessarily, but it's underserved. Usually the sexy thing in any company is like lead gen. Let's get as many leads as we can in and signups. But then after the signup, it's like, well, now what? And if customers are signing up, then great. But if they're not, then we're kind of stuck, you know, like we can't drive any more traffic. And a lot of times it's not really an onboarding problem as it is like a UX UI problem. Like some people use onboarding as a band-aid to fix bad UX UI when really it's a UX UI problem. The onboarding comes in to help solve a number of problems, but the goal of onboarding shouldn't be how to get them show them how to use the tool. Like that's not the goal of onboarding. Onboarding is to get them back to show the value of the tool, help the customer decide what the next step is in the to get have success with the product.
That totally makes sense. I'm curious what you think. So first of all, on the self-serve side, you talked a little a few benefits of like focusing on onboarding. Is there any other benefits to like, hey, you need to fix your UX and UI or other things on the onboarding for the self-serve SaaS companies?
Are there is there any advice that I have for that?
More like benefits. Like why should SaaS companies care about onboarding, especially if they're self-serve?
Yeah. I know Wes Bush is a big proponent of this product-led growth. And I think that's huge. Your product really should drive growth. That's really it's kind of silly. If you apply product-led growth to like cars, it's like, well, duh, if you build a good car, people are going to buy it and people are going to talk about it, right? I mean, any other industry, it's totally obvious. But in SaaS, for some reason, we feel like as long as we're solving a problem and as if we can, you know, if we can build a tool that solves a problem, then eventually customers will figure it out. But the truth is there's like maybe the top 2 to 3% of people that sign up for a SaaS product are like extremely motivated enough to go through a really bad UX UI to get their problem solved. The other 98% are just, they're either still in decision mode or any type of friction at all that comes up, they just leave right away because it's just too complicated, right? So, focusing on the UX UI really what you end up with is a product that's just really easy, not just to use, but to get to the customer to their desired result. And that is when companies buy your SaaS product, they're buying a result. And that's sometimes hard for us to remember. And if they don't get that result, then they're not going to be happy. If they do get it, then they continue paying. Now, how you get them there, whether you go to their house and or go to their office and like set up their team with like you hold their hand and actually set them up and walk you through it. That's one way to do it, like on the far end. And on the other far end, it's like having a really good UX UI that just shows customers exactly how to get success with a product and how to get help when they need it. And then reaching out in after the customer signs up to kind of follow their emotional journey to make sure that you know that they know that you're there to help them and that you built a product with them in mind, focused on them getting a specific result.
Right, that totally makes sense. That kind of brings up that whole concept of jobs to be done. So you're really trying to drive home like the goal that they're trying to accomplish. I'm curious about like big mistakes, like totally mistakes that you see in a bunch of onboarding sequence that you've seen or UX, whether that's UX, UI, or communication, that just totally boils your blood. Like it just like, oh, come on, this again. Like what are those big mistakes that, you see over and over again?
So there's two parts of onboarding that I look at. In-app, I call it internal and external onboarding. So internal onboarding is everything that happens inside the app. External is everything that happens outside the app. Now, internal onboarding is the most important part of the process. And internal onboarding, the problems I see with that is so many times you'll sign up for a tool and you'll log in and they just put you there without any context or idea of what to do next. And I'm working with a product right now and it's like they have a lot of really cool tools. It's a really great tool. It solves a huge problem, but like it's so hard to figure out what to do next in the product to have success. And so the more complicated the tool is, the more you need to have an onboarding process that kind of helps them get to their desired outcome, or at least help them accomplish their job to be done. And most of the time, especially with SaaS, I would say like 90% of companies I work with, when the user signs up and logs in, there's no context or no idea what the user is supposed to do next. Or on the flip side, there's all these like mandatory in-app walkthroughs that you have to go through. And the user's like, I don't want to go through this. This is not what I signed up for. I like to use the example of, you know, when you go to Disneyland, they give you a map of all the best features that you can go to. Like here's Pirate Island and here's, Dumbo Land. I've not been to Disneyland in many years. So I don't remember. I don't have no idea what's there anymore. But they say, here's all the best stuff and here's where you can go to find it, right? They don't like walk you from like park to park, you know, and say you have to go to Pirate Island first and then you have to go to Dumbo Land.
That would be annoying, right? That
would be super, very annoying, right? Yeah. And so, but everybody coming to Disneyland has, you know, they have a different thing that they want. They want to go to Future Island or whatever. They really want to go to this specific ride. So let them go to that ride first. And then while they're there, let them see all the other cool stuff that you have, you know, and make them aware of it. And so on the other hand, that's the other problem is that there's too much in there. There's too much onboarding and in-app stuff where customers get overwhelmed and they just feel like they're being pushed around. And on the other end, there's just like no context. That's one thing that really that I see a lot of times. It's really pretty easy to fix. The way that we fix that, honestly, is most of the time with onboarding, there's a non-linear process. It's not like step by step. So by giving them kind of an in-app checklist where you say, here are the things that you need to do in order to have success with the product, not necessarily in this specific order. And so they always know where they can always reorient themselves and say, okay, this is what I need to do in order for me to have success with the product. So that's one big thing. The other thing is really understanding the desired outcome of your market. So if I sign up for a tool like HubSpot, for instance, and in the segmentation questions, it's like, what are you hoping to accomplish with HubSpot? This, 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 or this. Then if I select X, you know, Z, then when I get put into the tool, I'm tagged with that specific outcome. So the email, the messages that come out to me are more focused on getting me to that outcome because that's what I've specified. But most times it's just like, we'll throw you into the tool and then hopefully you reach out to support if you can't figure it out. And if you're motivated enough to solve your problem, then you'll figure it out yourself. But then there's this huge gap in between of people who aren't ready for either one of those who just need you to show them how to use the tool.
That's a really, I love that analogy with Disneyland. I think I'm going to borrow that concept if you don't mind. I was thinking the other analogy I thought about is like a buffet. Like you don't want to walk people through like, oh,
yeah,
here.
Exactly. Yeah, no, buffet is a great one.
Yeah. Like I'd rather, some people like to eat dessert first and then have the rice after and then the chicken versus like some people like the salad. So, but the Disneyland's better. Like it's more fun. Like it's actually more fun.
Yeah.
No, not everybody likes going to buffets, but Disneyland is something else. You also talked about the other side, the external stuff. What kind of external things makes your blood boil? Like, it's like, come on, like these are things that you should be doing externally people are not.
So I have a series of external onboarding sequences that I create, and there's five of them. The first one is the path of first value, and the second is the sales sequence. So the path of first value is usually what I implement first. What I always recommend is to have a trigger-based onboarding process. So if a customer hasn't inputted their set up their calendar by day five, then they should get an email about setting up their calendar. So I suggest having a trigger-based sequence, and not like to the point where every single email is triggered and they have like 1,000 different triggers. You need to identify like what are the things a customer absolutely needs to do to get value from the product, and then make sure that they do those things within the trial period, right? So that's the trigger-based part. A lot of companies I see don't have trigger-based emails. Second thing is there's way too many calls to action in the emails. Email is this very unique medium that for some reason, like when we're having a conversation, we don't talk like we do, like we talk in email. Like you would never go up to somebody in a business meeting and say, hey, my name is Aaron. I do this, this, and this, and this. If you'd like some help, would you like to go over there to the bar and chat? Or maybe perhaps you'd like to check out our support team. Could you also please direct me to the person who's most responsible for like the marketing in your department? Like you would never say that, right? You'd say, hey, what's up? What do you guys do? What are you into? So with email, the onboarding email, we've kind of developed this really concise strategy where we identify a pain, we talk about the pain point, we show how a specific feature in the tool can solve the pain, and then we paint the picture of their life after the tool is in their life, right? So it's the three-step process. And then the only call to action in most emails is get this desired outcome by taking this action, doing it here, right? Instead of, hey, a lot of times I see emails are like, hey, it's Joan here. Are you still serious about doing your blah, blah, blah? You know, and I'm like, it's kind of like condescending. It's like, well, yeah, I'm serious, but I mean, how are you going to help me do that? So instead of being condescending, you just show people what is the next step they need to take, why they need to take it, and what the benefit of taking that step is. So that's the one of the big things is way too many calls to action in the emails. And the other big mistake is there's a few of them. I would say most emails I've seen that they're really successful are really plain text, no images, no graphics, and really short and concise. If you eliminate a lot of that corporate stuff from your emails, you're going to start to see a better response. Another thing is sending emails from a specific person instead of from the company. All of those things really help develop a relationship with the customer and help you, it builds trust, right? When you know you're getting an email from, Todd, you associate Todd with, HubSpot. And instead of like a nebulous team entity at HubSpot, it's hard to develop a relationship with a team entity, but it's easier for you to relate with Todd, So there's a bunch more things, but all of them add up into like this really effective strategy where now people look forward to getting your emails. Like when I see an email from Todd, I go, oh, I wonder what Todd's got for me today. What special, like what pain is he going to solve for me today? You know, like, what is he going to talk about today that's going to help me solve my problems? What value is he going to give me? Instead of, hey, it's Todd. I noticed you haven't logged into your account. What's going on? I thought you were serious about growing your business. You know, I see that's kind of in copywriting. I learned this from my friend Travis Sago. And I don't want to get too much into this, but there's different voices in your head, and one is nurturing parent, and then the nurturing parent is like, hey, have you considered doing this? And that's the parent we always wanted, growing up is, hey, come on, son, let's go talk about the mistake that you made. I'm not mad. I just want to talk to you about it and see. And then there's a critical parent, which is, why haven't you cleaned your room? Why haven't you done this yet? Where's your homework? Da, da, da. And oftentimes we we speak critically in our emails, and that voice, that critical parent, is what our audience is hearing when we're talking. And so we have to avoid that, because otherwise, when I get an email from Todd next time, I'm going to think, oh no, what is Todd going to get mad at me now for not doing?
That's another great one. You keep giving so much gold. Like I'm probably going to borrow that nurturing versus critical parent. I'm curious how you find out that, like, how do you get them to that? Like, help a company figure out what steps a user needs to take to get to that first value? Like, let's say a company comes up to you, hey, Aaron, help me out. Our onboarding sucks. Like, what would be your first few steps to, like, help them out with fixing their onboarding?
Yeah. First thing we do always is we go to I have a core systems foundation. The first part of that is interviewing customers, just identifying, because qualitative and quantitative. Most of the time, companies, most SaaS don't have a really good qualitative process in place, or quantitative for that matter. And having a user analytics tool is like the first thing that you should get set up. So I suggest a tool called Inner Trends, INNER Trends. And that tool is built and designed by a data scientist to help you identify what things result in conversions and activation. And that's like one of the best tools for identifying what a user needs to do. On the qualitative side, I have this whole framework of questions you ask. Some of the questions are like, when was the moment you realized this tool was right for you? What could you not live without? Or if this tool disappeared today, how would you feel and why? And then you start getting out all these answers from them about what parts of the tool they really, really need and really like, and what's valuable to them. So that kind of builds this path of first value. And then the other thing is we want to get them to this desired outcome. And most of the time, you cannot guarantee a desired outcome from your product, even if you functionally complete the actual product, right? I'm thinking about Mailshake, for instance. So with Mailshake, even if I have the best email in the world and I functionally complete mail, I got all the triggers set up and I have right, everything's perfect. If I don't send it to the right person, I'm not going to have success with Mailshake, right? But I'm going to associate that unsuccess with Mailshake, even if that's not the problem that Mailshake solves, right? So when we work with a new client, we identify, okay, what is the desired outcome? What is the path of first value? We do qualitative and quantitative, and then we come up with a hypothesis, and then we test that hypothesis over time to see how close we are to it. A lot of times we don't know what it is initially. Maybe it's the path of, or the aha moment is getting your first 5 meetings scheduled or your first payment, you know, sent in or whatever. InnerTrends will show you that. And then from the qualitative side, we can kind of identify that as well. Then our goal becomes, how do we get our customers to start receiving payments? And what are the gaps that are missing in between the functional completion of the product and the actual desired outcome? And how do we fill those gaps with the onboarding process or external onboarding emails?
When we come back in just a moment, Aaron shares about how to balance pain-focused welcome emails to benefit-focused emails in your user onboarding journey. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, Superside. As marketers, getting on brand design and creative exactly when your team needs it can be very painful. I know that firsthand working for marketing teams. It's hard to deliver on the seemingly endless number of requests that come in from teams across your company, and prioritizing those tasks can feel impossible. Instead of spending your time and resources on strategic projects that can possibly impact the business, you find yourself mired in production level tasks. Your agency may be failing you with skyrocketing costs and late turnarounds, while finding and managing freelancers is no longer a realistic option. There's just too many variables to manage, from sourcing to schedules, fees to overall quality of the delivered designs. Don't sweat it, just Superside it. With Superside.com, you get a dedicated design team that understands your goals and gets trained on your brand guidelines for the fraction of hiring a full-time designer. Your Superside design team acts as an extension of your organization, helping you to service your requests at volume and deliver on your company's design and creative needs in a scalable, efficient way. They'll confidently jump in at a moment's notice to produce the on-brand work you need when you need it. create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com, or you can find that link in the description of this episode. Enough about this, let's jump back into my chat with Aaron. I'm gonna ask that question. Why you mentioned this already, a lot of SaaS companies, they don't have a good qualitative feedback system. I actually find a lot of SaaS companies don't talk to customers at all. Is that what you're finding? And I'm curious why. Like, what is it? Are they scared? They're like, oh, I just love data so much. I don't want to get into, I'm too scared. Like, is it because they're lazy? I'm not sure.
I think there's a lot of reasons. It's definitely not because they're lazy. I think it's probably fear. It's fear of being rejected. Also fear of them canceling. I know a lot of SaaS companies who are just afraid to reach out to their customers because they don't want them to just cancel. And a lot of that is like kind of backwards thinking, right? And so I just, you know, my best solution that I found to this is just having a really, really clear process, how to get them on the phone, what questions to ask, how to interpret their answers. Like, I have a blueprint that I go through. It's called the customer niche dive. And it's just like, it removes all of the fear out of the call, because really there's no negative or positive outcome from talking to a customer with this framework. It's just information that you get. So you just detach your ego from it, detach the result, and it doesn't matter if you can't get any customers on the phone, and for the life of you can't do that, that's okay. That's actually like a result. Now we need to figure out why that is. And if they're so busy they can't get on the phone and talk, then that's something we need to incorporate in the sales process. Maybe there's a change we can make. And as far as like the onboarding, or maybe we need to look at who are we targeting. So there's like, doesn't matter what the outcome is of talking to a customer. Any outcome is a good outcome. So there's really, you can't lose by talking to a customer. You cannot lose.
When SaaS companies, what do you suggest for SaaS companies? Should they talk to customers on an ongoing basis, or just when they need to know a certain kind of information?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I'm borrowing what I learned from Sujan Patel. He talks to customers every week. And he has this really cool system. If you haven't signed up for Mailshake yet, I would just suggest you do that, because you sign up, you use the product, he sends out an NPS score, you kind of an NPS survey. If you fill it out, then he asks you would you mind hopping on the phone and talking to me about the product? Or he asks you to send in like a written testimonial. Like, he has the whole process like figured out. And he kind of exemplifies this idea that as a CEO or founder, your job should be to be an expert in your customer more than anything. Like, you could always find somebody who's an expert in design, always find somebody who's an expert in UX, UI, or developing or marketing. But it's what's really going to separate you from anyone else is how much you understand your customer. And the only way to do that is to just talk to them on a regular basis, even if it's one a week, you know, and having, I call it a feedback loop system. So you constantly have people replying to you and saying, yes, I'd like to chat with you about this, or I'd love to give you a review, or I'm unhappy with this, or I'm unhappy with that. And then spend your time, if you just put in your calendar, like a block of time where you just hop on chat and you just say, hey, it's Joe here. I'm the founder of blah, blah, blah. Just curious. How the product's working out for you today, if you've had success with it, if it's working out for you, you know, and just have a chat with people. There's lots of ways to have conversations that don't include calling them. And all of the data that you get, especially from paying customers, I'm not talking about people that aren't paying. You have to take that with a grain of salt, but paying customers, the feedback they give, that is really, really what they should be focusing on, and doing it on a regular basis.
That's another great one I'm going to steal probably. You should, you know, founders should be experts in their customers. You know, you can always get an expert in marketing or design. I know you've probably mentioned a few already, but can you like put it all together? Like, what are some best practices that you would say comes from like great user onboarding?
Yeah. So first of all, look at your SaaS. There's two tracks. There's self-serve and then one-on-one, right? So, and you might have a combination of both. First is identify what you want to focus on first. Focus on one. Do you want to improve your one-on-one demos and reduce churn and have an onboarding process that's designed to reduce churn instead of onboard customers? Or do you want to focus on your self-serve? So first of all, you're not going to be able to fix all of them at the same time. So whatever's generating the most revenue for you right now, chances are it's not totally optimized yet. So focus on that. The second thing is the process that I go through is identify a specific segment of your market. For some companies, it's easier than others. If you are serving security guard companies, for instance, then that's like a super specific niche, and you really don't have to like focus on a segment. Like your segment is already like built into your product. Is that you only help security guards, right? So understand the niche, understand what it is that they want to accomplish, understand what makes your product different and better. And so you don't necessarily always have to be the best in the world to be able to do really, really well. You just have to be the only one solving a problem. I say this all the time. If you want to really scale fast, solve a problem that no one's solving for an audience that no one is serving, right? And that's hard to do if you already have a product because you have to go find it. But if you can find it, I was just talking to someone a couple weeks ago, actually in Dublin, and he built this great product. He scaled to, I think it was like 5 million, but he couldn't grow. And then he identified that there was a small little segment of his audience who was using the tool for an unintended like purposes. And he switched and that he realized that the tool was really beneficial for this specific segment. Actually it was like a webinar tool, but they were using it for internal instead of external sales. And so we just shifted. And when you shift and you identify your segment, it's so much easier to onboard because now you know what your customers are hoping for. So if you're under 20K MRR, shouldn't be focusing right now on scaling things unless you can scale predictably, unless you know your numbers, you know, every 100 visits you get, you know, you can see an ROI on your profit. Unless you're at that point, I would be doing one-on-one demos and doing things that don't scale until you get to that MRR, because cash will solve a lot of your problems. Especially if you're not taking investment. So get your MRR up, prove the concept of the product, and then after you've been able to do it, something that's not scalable, then you can start to scale with some self-serve onboarding. And I know a lot of companies, some might disagree with me on this. But if you're over 20K, that's when you should really focus on your onboarding process. And then when you get to that point, then it's customer discovery, path of first value, filling in the gaps between the customer's desired outcome and what the functional completion of the product is, and then creating a sequence that guides them through that process for the life cycle of their whole journey.
One other thing that I saw from your website is, it might be connected, and you probably already talked a little bit about this, is you have this thing called the onboarding email formula, and I quote from your website, that increases conversion by 3,000%. And you already talked a little bit about email, but is there anything else in that formula that you can talk about?
Let me see. So the formula is pretty simple. Identify the path of first value. Map it out so you know what the steps are. Typically, when you're starting out, especially if you don't have like all the triggers set up and you're not sure what the path of, you know, what the moments of first value is, I just recommend putting in a drip campaign just to get something in. But the drip campaign introduces new products, introduces new features that solve new pains. It educates customers on why your product is better, and it also addresses objections. So a lot of times in the trial period, I'll have an email that says questions you might be asking, and it'll just go over not the typical FAQs like, how do I change my billing zip code, or how do I do this? It's like, is this really going to be a good fit for me? How do I know it's working? When can I typically see a result? All the questions you get in those one-on-one demos from people, those objections, you put those in an email and address those. And that, once you kind of like removed all objections or address all objections, there's really no reason for that customer not to buy. And email is a really good way to do that. So as long as you're focusing on one specific thing for each email, like what is it you want the customer to do? Do you want them to go into the product and take action? Do you want them to see why your product is different. Do you want them to get value? Do you want them to like contact you? As long as you have one specific action and the emails are short and they're pain focused and benefit focused instead of feature focused, you're going to be way ahead of where most people are right now.
I'm curious what you think about welcome emails. I find welcome emails are probably one of the most opened emails because, you know, people are expecting that. What would be that one goal that should be for that welcome email?
I think it depends. A lot of the welcome emails that we do are kind of what we call like a resource email. And so depending on who the client is and if they have a AE assigned to the account or not, usually it's just like, welcome, so glad to have you. Here are the things you're going to be able to do with our tool, and just like paint the picture for them. Send emails and automate emails to your contacts. Automatically sync your Gmail with your da-da-da. Like paint the picture for them of what their life's going to be like and make it really clear. And then at the end of the email, usually I'll say, if you need help, there's two ways to get it. One, reply to this email, or two, click on the chat bar at any time in the in-app. Thanks. We'll look forward to our next email where we're going to show you how to da 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 da, and then see ya. And then from, you know, Todd. So that's usually what I do in the first email. Every email after that is really focused on one specific thing.
I really like how you're setting the expectation for like, hey, we're going to be sending you a few more tips to help solve your problem. I want to talk about video because I didn't know that you had, we were on video marketing before. How can people leverage video in their onboarding, whether that's internally or externally?
Yeah, so video is difficult because in one aspect, because if your product's constantly changing, your videos are going to be changing all the time. So I usually recommend video when you're starting to do video to answer and help customers get to their desired outcome. So instead of how to use our product, it's stuff that's more evergreen. Like here's how to write a good cold email if you're a Mailshake, or here's how to do this. Because then it becomes marketing. It becomes a marketing tool for you to generate traffic. It also becomes a churn reducer because now you're helping educate your customers on how to use the tool and have success. And it won't be outdated. Like if it's a good solid strategy, then and especially if they can only implement the strategy with your tool. So your tool might change, like the features and benefits and all that stuff, or like the buttons and stuff might change, but the basic like features of the tool benefits that you get from the tool are gonna be the same, right? So I might show in this demo or this video how to send out cold email, how I wrote the cold email and send it out using Mailshake. But really the goal is focused on the actual like closing the success gap from, as Lincoln Murphy says. And then once you have a bunch of those, because those solve multiple purposes, then you can have like a video team that comes in and can actually, like once the product is stable, and actually create short little videos on how to do specific things when they're in the product is kind of like a way to supplement support. And then one of the biggest underused video kind of strategies is webinars and like short workshops. Like when you sign up every Tuesday, we're gonna do a complimentary, you know, concierge setup or white glove setup where we're gonna walk you through your account and we'll show you how to use it and you can ask any questions that you need to, right? So that's another way to leverage video. It's not you can record those, but for the initially I like to do those live because you really get a lot of good feedback from them. But that's typically how I suggest using videos initially.
Do you find those webinars work? I've signed up for a few email marketing tools and they drive me to a webinar. Have you found some of your clients actually like, oh, this has actually improved our let's say trial to paid conversions?
Well, dude, I'll tell you, LeadPages has built their whole business on webinars. LeadPages, ClickFunnels, another example, ConvertKit. I know ConvertKit did a webinar on how to get the first 1,000 people onto your email list, which is brilliant. It's brilliant because one, they're solving a specific pain point, right? And second, they're incorporating ConvertKit into that strategy. So once you get those 1,000 customers, how are you going to email them? And you know, how are you going to, what system are you going to use to generate the leads? And so they're using ConvertKit in that whole process to solve a pain. I mean, it's brilliant. And so if what I see a lot of people doing is you get hop on this webinar and we'll show you how to use our product. We'll show you how to use the product or five cool ways you can use HubSpot. Like, no one cares about HubSpot. What they care about is a specific outcome, right? Video works so well. I think right below like one-on-one demos and handholding is video. And then underneath that is like kind of maybe more like chat, stuff like that. And then email. And then there's like text and stuff that falls in between there. But video is very, very underutilized. I'm getting my clients more and more to use video, and we're testing a lot of different things on video to kind of really get some results there. So
curious if you've tested any offline stuff, like, you know, direct mail, and you did mention it in the beginning, but is there any offline stuff that you've tested in terms of like increasing that trial to paid or free to paid conversions?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I haven't tested that. Do I suggest it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Most of the clients I work with, I kind of like thrive with SaaS. I already have a bunch of traffic coming to their site. So traffic really isn't the problem. If you're in like a one-on-one and enterprise level type deals and you want to create multiple touch points, LinkedIn voice messaging, email, video, Instagram, Facebook, direct mail, any opportunity, any touch point you can get to talk to your customer and introduce them to the pain that you solve is good. And especially who doesn't go to their mailbox, right? Like no one is getting up in the morning and thinking, I'm not going to check my mailbox. I hope I didn't get any mail today. You know, like we all go to the mailbox, even if it's junk, every single time, hoping for that one letter from like a lost loved one or like, you know, whatever. And so it's still really, really effective. And so it's phone too. Everybody's scared to get on the phone and talk to people and do cold calling. But that's why it's so effective, is because there's so few people actually doing it. And second, people that are doing it right. So yeah, those are two. I haven't experimented with those yet, but eventually we will get to the point where I have a training on how to do that and how to automate that and scale it. But yeah, that's a really good point.
I'm about to hit the hour that we've had together. I'm curious, as a few last questions, what your one piece of advice would be to SaaS founders? Like, if you had one piece of advice for them, what would that be?
Man, one piece of advice for all SaaS founders.
Okay, two.
For two SaaS founders?
No, two pieces of advice. Like, I'm just joking, but whatever you can think of. Like, this is something
dude,
that they need.
You know, I would say the number one piece of advice is stop trying so many different things and focus on the things that are working and getting those better. For some reason, as humans, we always want to try the new thing. You know, it's like the new thing is going to solve our problem. But if you've done cold emailing and it worked really well for you, keep doing that. Figure out how to like scale that out. Do more, do it better. Don't jump into Facebook ads because without maximizing what you're really good at. So focus is the number one thing. And I see a lot of people like starting multiple SaaS companies. I think that's terrible advice to have multiple companies running. If you can't scale one, if you have one that's already doing really well and you want to move to the next one, that's fine. But focus on what's working and get it to a point where it's profitable, and then start experimenting with things once you have more time and money to do that. So that's probably number one piece of advice. And I'll give you two.
Okay.
Can I do two?
Yes, please go ahead.
So the second one is, I am a really firm believer in, and Dan Martell talks about this all the time, is a firm believer in protecting your time and doing what you're really good at. And I think a lot of founders get stuck in the day-to-day minutiae and don't focus on what I call I don't call this, but I read this in a book called The Big Leap. It's focusing on your zone of genius, what you're really, really good at, what you're better at than anyone else, and identifying what that is, and then getting really, really good at that and focusing on that and hiring people to do the other things. Initially, that's going to be kind of hard because, you know, you're doing everything. But start identifying what is it that you are really, really, really good at, and then do that, and then hire people to fill in the gap.
Wow, two good ones. I got so many quotable stuff here that I can tweet out. Last question, where can people find out more about you and your work online? Like, what would be your call to action? You can have several if you want. It doesn't just have to be one for my listeners.
Yeah, so I have a group called SaaS Growth Hacks on Facebook. It's 16,000 founders. if you join that group, I will send you an email with a link to download. I'm actually releasing a new book, my first book, which is called More Conversions Now. It's for SaaS founders on how to increase conversions. And so I'll give you a copy of that for free. Just join the group and then email me. And if you want to reach out to me directly, just go to aaroncrowell.io and you can just you can reach out to me. I have a chat there and I also have a contact. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Aaron. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome, dude. It was fun chatting with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for this episode. Here are my takeaways from this episode. First, a lot of time, it's not really an onboarding problem. It's a UX/UI problem. Some people use onboarding as a band-aid to fix bad UX and UI. It's a UX and UI problem. So think about that. You have to think about your user experience and user interface and look at how you can fix that to really think about how you can fix user onboarding. Second, your product really should drive growth. If you apply product-led growth to like cars, if you build a good car, people are going to buy it and people are going to use it and people are going to talk about it. And we should think about the same way with digital products. Great products lead to great people talking about that great product. And third, identify what are the things that customer absolutely needs to do to get value from the product, and then make sure to do those things within the trial period. Now, did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode at RamleyJohn or email ramley@growthtoday.fm. Before we end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Superside. Built for marketing, creative, product design, and strategy teams, Superside makes it easy to bring your ideas to life. With a dedicated team assigned to all subscription customers, Superside delivers game-changing design at lightning-fast speeds with no pricing surprises. Create an account and get started, or better yet, book a demo to see it in action at superside.com. You can also find the link in the description of this episode. Please also support me. First, you can just share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn, or you can tell a friend about this episode or this podcast. Second, join the Grow Today mailing list. And third, you can support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode, where you can get an ad-free version of this podcast and get a lot of other perks and bonuses. You can go to patreon.com/growtoday or find the link in the description. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, RamleyJohn. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.